Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in our first hour is overcoming obstacles. Each of my guests is explaining situations that need overcoming. My next guest understands that nearly half of the world's population, that's 3 billion people, live on less than $2.50 a day. Most humanitarian aid is spent to solve world poverty is wasted. He examines the possibilities of applying different type of economics to solve world poverty. We'll discuss his findings from his book, More Than Good Intentions. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to speak to Jacob Appel, you can call us at 639-0008. Jacob Appel studied mathematics at Columbia University and then spent 2 years as a field researcher with Innovations for Poverty Action, which is an abbreviated IPA, in Ghana, West Africa, and he studied microcredit. Since 2008, he's traveled across Latin America, Africa, and Asia, working with the field and the IPA and other development research organizations. He's currently studying how street market micro-entrepreneurs make career decisions and manage their business in Kolkata, India, where he lives. Welcome to the show, Jacob. How are you today?
Doing fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. You are truly a thought leader with your book, More Than Good Intentions, How a New Economics is Helping Solve Global Poverty. So let's set the stage for my listeners, because I don't think many of my listeners understand the magnitude of the problem, especially living here in the United States. So first of all, $2.3 trillion has been spent by the wealthiest nations on reducing poverty over the last 50 years. That's $2.3 trillion. Individual donors here in the United States contribute over $200 billion to charities each year. That's three times the amount that is given by corporations, foundations, and bequest givings. So why then hasn't poverty gone away or at least been dramatically reduced, Jacob?
Well, so a couple points. One is that we have made some progress. Those numbers that you mentioned, $2.3 trillion and $200 billion a year, that money has made a difference. So poverty has declined in the past couple of decades. But the other side of the coin is there's still a very, very long way to go. So as you said earlier, about half the world lives on less than $2.50 a day. And you know, that's an area where obviously we need to make a lot of progress. So why hasn't poverty been solved entirely? Well, I think, and you know, More Than Good Intentions, the book really takes the tack that part of the problem is understanding the question in that way. Tackling global poverty is not really a one-shot deal. You know, as you'd expect, there are many thousands of dimensions to this problem, and global poverty as an umbrella really really subsumes many local problems in different local contexts. So a big part of our approach is just trying to focus in on those local issues and find solutions that work, that are proven to work, to solve specific concrete problems.
All right. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody, author of the book More Than Good Intentions. And Jacob, with the recent downturn in 2008-2009 in the world economy, there are two major mindsets that donors have about the money that's being spent to eradicate poverty. What are those two mindsets, and why are we starting to see a shift right now in the way that donors are looking at the money that they, quote-unquote, invest in charities?
So, yeah, there are two kind of polar viewpoints in the public debate, and one is very sort of rosy. So there's a group of people who say that, look, we've spent this money in the past, we're making some progress, our kind of approach to solving poverty is fundamentally okay, but we need to throw a lot more money at it. That's one side. And on the other side, you have a group of people who are saying our approach is fundamentally flawed. The institutions and the organizations that we have fighting poverty are really just at their base. They're inefficient or they're cumbersome. And what we really need to do is divert resources away from them. You know, we're throwing money away if we give it to the UN or to the World Bank. So that's another kind of pole of this debate. And what Dean and I are proposing with More Than Good Intentions is that there's a really sensible middle road here, that some programs work and some programs don't work. And now we have the tools to determine which is which. And that's the exciting news that we want to bring to readers.
And that is the critical message in the book, More Than Good Intentions, Jacob. But I just want to, before we leave and move on to the next subject, I want to drill down on those people that you say have the more rosy outlook, that the money that's being spent is helping solve the problem. How do they know that? I mean, your book looks at it and says there are ways that we can measure this, we can test this, and it all seems very scientific, very measurable, and to me, very logical. But those people that have the more rosy outlook that say, yes, the money that we've been spending to eradicate world poverty is helping, how do they really know that?
Well, in some cases, they do have strong evidence behind them, but in many cases, in too many cases, they really are skating on anecdotes. So, you know, you don't have to look much further than whichever microfinance or microcredit brochure passed over your desk most recently, you'll often hear these stories of, oh, so-and-so got a loan, and that allowed her to grow her business, and now her entire family is, you know, living much better than they were a year ago. These kinds of personal stories are really compelling to individuals in the developed world, you know, to potential donors, to people like you and me, but they don't tell the whole story. So What we think is we need to move from those kind of anecdotes that are handpicked to talking about systematic evidence on a larger scale.
All right. Now, donors are becoming more demanding of this systematized accounting of how their money is going for. So tell us about your approach of applying economic theory to charitable programs.
Well, that's exactly right. So for the past maybe 5 or 10 years, some of the bigger donors of private foundations like the Gates Foundation or the Ford Foundation, they've been demanding that their recipients, that is the charitable organizations they support, show them rigorous evidence that their programs are working. And the next step, I think, in that progression is that individual donors, people like you and me, can make those same demands when we cut our checks. So what we're advocating in More Than Good Intentions is that just the general public who, you know, who might support a charity, you know, with $20 or $50 or $100 a year, you can still make that $20 or $50 go a lot further if you make an informed decision about supporting a charity that works.
All right, that makes sense. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody, author of the book More Than Good Intentions, How a New Economics is Helping to Solve Global Poverty. And Jacob, I work in and around non-profit groups. My wife works for one, and I know, you know, their organization is a little bit more airy-fairy than it is scientific, I would have to say. So how would a charity, which has traditionally relied on these anecdotal stories of how they're making improvements, how would they move from the anecdotal mode, the airy-fairy mode, as I call it, into a more rigorous experimentation sort of mode? How can they implement those types of things within their organization if they don't have the background of doing it historically?
Well, that's a great question, and I think there's a point that a lot of people don't see, and that's that many of the outcomes that we see as kind of soft, you know, outcomes like satisfaction, happiness, empowerment, you know, these words are a little bit vague, or it's hard to put a very fine point on what they mean, but it's not impossible to measure those things in meaningful ways. So, for instance, there's a study that was done on microlending in South Africa that asked clients about their stress levels, and you know, the finding ultimately was that people who took loans, you know, had slightly higher stress but were making more money. The point of that example is to say that some of those, you know, what you called the airy-fairy kinds of issues or outcomes can actually be meaningfully measured, and we can think about which programs work best at achieving outcomes like empowerment or satisfaction or gender equality, things like that. So the first part of the answer is I think some of those sort of softer issues are within reach for this kind of rigorous evaluation. The second part of the answer is how does an organization move towards doing these kind of rigorous tests? Well, there are a couple options. One is organizations like IPA, Innovations for Poverty Action, which partners around the world with charities and nonprofits who are undertaking initiatives that they want to find out whether these initiatives are effective or not. So that's what nonprofits around the world can do is to partner with an organization that will help to evaluate some new program.
All right, and so seeking outside help is one of the very first steps in order to become more scientific in evaluating the effectiveness of nonprofit work. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody, author of the co-author of the book More Than Good Intentions. And Jacob, one of your specialties, as I said at the outset, is microlending, microcredit. So let's dive into that if we can, because you are an expert on microcredit or microlending. This invention of microlending was actually created by a St. Louis entrepreneur, Menlo Smith, and it was popularized by Mohammed Yunus, who has actually come here to Ventura County to Channel Islands University there to talk about this. You have some remarkable findings, however, in the book about microlending and its effect or its effectiveness on improving poverty. You mind sharing those findings with us?
Yeah, sure. So the first place to start is that probably more than any other anti-poverty intervention or approach, microcredit has been widely celebrated, and I mean, many people know the name Mohammed Yunus. You know, people know about these activities, these microloans around the world, and people are rightfully excited about them. It makes sense. It's sort of intuitive that it's not a handout, but it's a hand up, and you give somebody a loan to grow a small business, and it helps them to lift themselves and their families out of poverty. That's a great, you know, a really sort of compelling and inspiring story. And so beginning some years back, economists went into the field and went looking for evidence about this story. And what's come back in the first few sort of large-scale rigorous trials is a bit more mixed than that story would suggest. So microcredit has been shown to produce some positive outcomes for some people, but it's fallen far short of the kind of cure-all that it's been sold as. What we have found is that in a different area of microfinance, there's micro-savings. So rather than making a small loan to an entrepreneur, what if you opened a sort of simple, bare-bones savings account, allowing them to put aside, 25 cents a day or 50 cents a day in a, you know, secure, interest-bearing savings account? Well, rigorous evaluations have found some of those micro savings approaches to actually be more impactful than microcredit.
And it is a very interesting, because you tell this point, or you make this point through stories that you tell in the book. So the story that struck me or impressed me the most about microcredit was the story about Mercy, who was a microloan borrower. Tell us the story about Mercy and why she just really couldn't get ahead, and what was the limitation that microcredit had for her.
So I met Mercy at a meeting of these outstanding microcredit borrowers in Ghana. She's one of a handpicked group of clients who had taken numerous loans, like 10 or 12 loans, over the course of a few years from a major microlender there. And these loans are what's called group loans. So a bank will give a sum of money to a group of, 10, 15, 20, 25 borrowers. And then all those borrowers are jointly responsible to pay off the loan. So that means that the idea is, if one of the 15 borrowers in the group is short 1 week, then the other 14 have to make up for her payment. And in that way, the bank gets its money, and the borrowers get their loan, and everyone's happy. But in fact, in this story, there are really some winners and some losers. And someone who had lost out a lot was Mercy. So here's a woman who had taken more than 10 loans. She had always been perfect, always came to the loan repayment meetings with her full payment in hand. And so over the course of 10-plus loans, she wound up covering for a lot of her co-borrowers who were less on the ball than she was. And this had added up to the tune of like over $1,000. So here's a poor woman running a small business in Accra, the capital of Ghana, who's managed to spend $1,000 covering for other poor micro entrepreneurs just because she happened to be in their borrowing groups.
And it's a very interesting and compelling story. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody, co-author of the book More Than Good Intentions, How New Economics is Helping to Solve Global Poverty. And you talked about the other alternative there is micro savings. And I think you've got a very interesting and fun story about Vijaya in India who could be a beneficiary of micro savings. So through that story, tell us about micro savings and how she might employ that.
Right. So Vijaya was a flower seller who I met at a flower market in Chennai. She was sitting there. Flower sellers in India sell, first of all, just plain flowers, but second of all, they sell garlands, which are used for religious rites. So she was sitting there threading a bunch of marigold blossoms and jasmine blossoms onto onto these garlands. It was really a nice place to sit and do an interview. But as we were sitting and talking, she told me a little bit about her daily routine. And part of her daily routine involved paying a few dollars to this guy who would come around. And I asked, who is this guy? Well, he's my moneylender. So when I dug a little deeper, she told me that she uses a moneylender, so that is high-priced, expensive debt. She used expensive debt to pay for almost all of her regular expenses, like rent on her house and school fees for her kids. And I had to ask, well, geez, you're making enough money to pay off that debt. So why take it in the first place? Why not just save your money and then avoid paying interest by paying out of your savings? And she said, well, I'd love to do that, but my husband is a drunk. So if I take any money home and try to save it, you know, he gets his hands on it, and then it's out the door. So here was a case where, sort of a very typical story. She could have been perfectly well served by having a savings account and not by having a micro loan. You know, the kinds of things that she was spending on were not income generating. They were not, not sort of economic engines.
They were expenses.
She was spending on expenses.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jacob. It's a very compelling story and a very good reason for thinking about micro savings as an alternative to that. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody. More Than Good Intentions is his book. And, Jacob, we've only got about a minute left, but one of the things that I found remarkable about your book is the solutions to problems don't always need to involve big money. In fact, you've got some findings in your book about a Kenyan primary school where the low-cost solution, it was actually the better solution. And it was a solution between spending $3.50 per student versus over $80 per student, and the $3.50 solution was better. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so this is a very exciting finding, and the finding is about deworming. But deworming is normally a health initiative, but we actually stumbled on this looking for solutions to problems with school attendance. So in Kenya, there's this problem where students are not making it to primary school, even though the schools are open. So what can we do to boost their attendance rates? Well, a bunch of different things were tried, from giving away textbooks, giving away uniforms, providing lunch at school, a lot of kind of common sense education programs. And they worked okay. There was some mixed evidence on them. And then there was this one outstanding idea, and that was, hey, maybe kids are missing school because they're sick, because they have worm infestations, which is very, very common, prevalent in that area. And so maybe we should give them a deworming pill for 50 cents per student per year, and see if that helps. And sure enough, not only did kids almost instantly become healthier, but they also started going to school more. And a follow-up study some years later found that, having been at school more, they were now better educated and actually earning more money in the long term than students who had not been dewormed.
A huge success. We're talking to Jacob Appel, everybody, author of the book More Than Good Intentions. Jacob, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.